Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 195 at 17,191. S&P 500 down 27 at 2002. NASDAQ Composite down 43 at 46.37. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 10 basis points at 1.72%. Oil down $1.19 at $44.26 per barrel. Gold down $8.80 at $12.84.30 per ounce. Silver down 7 cents at $18.06. So far this week, we've seen some really interesting earnings and interesting reaction in the market. Microsoft stock logged its biggest one-day dollar decline in nearly 15 years on Tuesday after the company posted disappointing earnings Monday afternoon. Shares of Microsoft closed down yesterday, $4.35 at $42.66, wiping out $34.7 billion in stock market value. The Dow Industrials dropped 291 points yesterday. Then, after the close yesterday, Apple posted the largest quarterly net income of any public company in history, $18 billion for the quarter. That provided an early boost to the markets today, at least until the FOMC statement. The Dow Industrials are down from record highs, not too bad. Since hitting an intraday high of 18,103 on December 28th, the Dow has been choppy through January, on three occasions dropping down to the 17,200 range, but not dropping under. 17,262 on January 6th, 17,243 on January 16th, and 17,288 yesterday. These three lows formed a floor, or a level of support, for the Dow. Today, the Dow closed at 17,191. We broke support. The next level of support is 17,067 from mid-December, and then the big round number of 17,000. If we break the 17,000 support, the next level is 15,855 from mid-October. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 is sitting right at the 2,000 level. The Federal Reserve continues to try to make the case for patience, which is to say a low interest rate environment, at least for now. The FOMC wrapped up their two-day policy meeting today and repeated it would be patient in deciding when to raise benchmark borrowing cost from zero. They were a little more upbeat about the economic outlook, saying economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace. That's a slight shift in words from their earlier assessment of a moderate pace of growth. The FOMC issued a statement, but there was no news conference today. The statement said, labor market conditions have improved further, with strong job gains and a lower unemployment rate, and recent declines in energy prices have boosted household purchasing power. The Fed believes the economy will move to 2% inflation as the labor market improves further and the transitory effects of lower energy prices and other factors dissipate. Low oil prices are a key part of the equation. If prices rebound quickly and climb back to $100 a barrel, then the Fed will probably respond with higher rates. But the drop in oil has been so strong, it might not be a V recovery. There are benefits to the economy from lower oil prices. It stirs the animal spirits. Also, it tightens the screws on oil producers such as Russia and Iran and Venezuela, making them more receptive. It was one of the shortest statements from the Fed in a couple of years, likely designed to give the impression that everything is normal, everything is on pace for the long-promised rate increase. No reason for delay, but no rush either. The overall tone of the statement was a bit more hawkish, and that sent stocks and oil lower, but pushed bond prices and the dollar higher. Now, there are some people who believe the dollar will crash, the economy will implode, and zombies will roam through the streets, even though they have no facts to support their theories. The problem is that the Fed is still saying they will eventually try to raise interest rates, despite speculation of QE4. Those looking for the Fed to save the day with QE4 are probably looking in the wrong place. The U.S. economy is the cleanest shirt in the dirty clothes hamper. It just doesn't make sense for the Fed to jump back into QE, not now. They are well aware that such a move would smack of desperation, have political implications, and likely produce less than satisfying results. Plus, you may have noticed, the economic data doesn't support such a move. The unemployment rate is down, and even though wages have been stagnant for the long term, they're not collapsing. Note here, I'm not saying wages will jump, just that there doesn't seem to be a big chance of a large decline. Most of the economic data is pretty decent. Third quarter GDP was very solid, and first quarter GDP should be decent. We'll find out later this week. Consumer confidence is high, even if that isn't translating into durable goods orders. Perhaps the biggest long-term market risk is the amount of debt companies have piled up in the low interest rate environment that the Fed has created. Companies have used low interest debt to engineer buybacks and acquisitions, and sometimes just to keep dollars offshore and away from the IRS. And it isn't just companies, but the government as well. Debt service on $18 trillion in debt would get expensive fast. If the Fed raises rates, they run the risk of having to reverse course and undo rate hikes if it goes bad and the economy comes to a screeching halt. There is no fundamental reason right now to raise rates, and there is really no reason for the Fed to try to get in front of the recovery. It smells a little too much like 1937. So for now, the Fed can jawbone, that is, to issue hawkish statements without actually doing anything hawkish, and then sit back and wait patiently. No matter how it plays out, the Fed would have to communicate. They'd have to lay out a full-fledged campaign or a full-fledged crisis to get justification for QE4. But this is not about American fears. It is more about global weakness. It is about how the world transitions away from Fed-driven liquidity and passes the baton to the rest of the world. If you haven't noticed, the handoff has been taking place. The ECB introduced QE last week, which is probably too little too late, the most likely result being the Eurozone will need another round of QE. Japan has been in QE mode for quite some time, actually QQE, the Bank of Japan's promise to double the monetary base, which will likely be extended in April. China's economy only grew at 7.4% last year, slowest rate of growth in 24 years, and they're now targeting 7% growth for 2015, and to achieve that, they will likely inject liquidity. This is all about what is happening around the world, not America. The concern is not just that weak global growth will dampen U.S. exports or that a strong dollar will further hurt the export sector of the economy and cut into multinational profits. The strengthening of the dollar can lead to imported deflation, touching off another down leg in the U.S. With the rest of the world sneezing, the U.S. catches cold. While it is possible that Yellen could turn more dovish, any such move would probably not entail QE4, unless there is a crisis. If domestic growth is threatened by global factors, look for the Fed to use unconventional tools. And if you think QE and interest rate policy are the only tools in the toolbox, think again. One easy move would be to stop paying interest on excess reserves held by banks at the Fed. Stopping those payments could force the banks to pull their excess reserves and find more profitable uses for the funds, like making more loans, at least in theory. In practice, this has been an ineffective tool, but it is the opposite of tightening. The Fed could also take action to devalue the dollar, slowly and incrementally, of course, to revive exports. The Fed could relax credit restrictions. The Fed could buy different debt instruments tied directly to infrastructure or Fed Chairwoman Yellen can use the bully pulpit to push for fiscal stimulus. For now, the focus will be on how the liquidity baton is passed from the Fed to the other central banks, and the patience of the Fed is just an opportunity to assess the progress of more easing from the rest of the world. In other news today, it's still earnings season, and we have a few selected reports for you. After the closing bell, Facebook reported net income rose to $701 million for the fourth quarter, compared to $523 million a year ago. Profit, excluding some items, 54 cents per share. That was about 6 cents better than estimates. Revenue grew 49% to $3.8 billion, also topping estimates. Facebook was flat to slightly lower in after-hours trading. Earlier, AT&T posted fourth-quarter earnings of 55 cents per share, excluding items, up from 53 cents a share in the year-ago period. AT&T also reported robust subscriber growth, announcing 1.9 million net subscriber additions. Boeing up 3% after posting profit that beat analyst estimates and predicted that it would make good in 2015 in converting a record jetliner order backlog into cash. About 77% of the S&P 500 companies that have posted earnings this season have beaten analyst estimates, while about 55% have topped sales projections. FXCM, the currency brokerage that almost collapsed this month as the Swiss franc surged, will seek repayment from institutional and high net worth customers whose accounts went negative amid the volatility. Those investors account for about 60% of the brokerage's losses. However, New York-based FXCM said today in a statement that traders who made smaller bets, and that's about 90% of their clientele, with negative balances, will have their losses forgiven. Royal Dutch Shell has signed an $11 billion deal with Iraq to construct a petrochemicals plant in its southern oil hub of Basra after signing a memorandum of understanding with its industry ministry for the project back in 2012. Shell's facility is expected to come online within 5 to 6 years, and it would make Iraq the largest petrochemical producer in the Middle East. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. You can even get an app for your smartphone, take us with you wherever you take your phone. If you'd like to read along and listen to archived audio as well, the daily blog is eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com. Stick around. The review continues.